movie film roles. A sprocket at the edge becomes the letter I in IFC Films. Red framed letters glow. Kenology. In space, the sun sinks behind a spinning Earth. The Earth turns translucent. Inside it, golden specks form a red word. Arte. Your images, Council of Europe. A film strip rolls. White bars narrow into squares, then fissure diagonally. They fade upward to form a fractured T. RT/features. White dots solidify to form letters over words. CG Cinema. On a white background, black letters type, delete, and retype. CG. C-I-N-C-M. CG Cinema presents. In co-production with New Bioscope Film, Scope Pictures, Platform Production, Piano, Art de France Cinema. In association with RT Features, Dauphin Films, Telepot Studio, Scope Invest. With the participation of Art de France, Your Images, Mitteldeutsche Medienförderung, Val Image, La Valloni, Gotland's Filmfond. With the participation of Film Capital Stockholm, the Swedish Film Institute, Sveriges Television AB, Le Film du Lissange, Kinology. In clouds, a plane descends. A painted rainbow streaks its white tail. Inside, a man with graying brown hair cradles a woman. The woman wears a flannel band over her eyes.
Bumpy.
It's the last time I ever get on a plane again.
He smiles and strokes her wavy red hair.
If we die, Jim will be an orphan.
She matters.
The woman lifts the band onto her forehead. Out a window, an ocean glimmers along a shoreline. On the tarmac, passengers exit the plane down a staircase. The man wears sunglasses. In a parking lot, the man carries keys. They roll suitcases. The man opens the trunk of a gray hatchback car. They load their luggage. Inside the car, the woman types on a touchscreen.
Faro Damba, D-A-M-B-A.
House number?
2078.
Go.
You will reach your destination in 1 hour, 48 minutes.
She locks a seatbelt. The man reverses. On a road, he drives.
In 200 meters, turn left on Skarfalskutten. Then you will turn right on Chiltharvachen.
The woman grins.
In 100 meters, turn left on Skarfalskutten.
He drives along a road lined with trees.
No, I didn't add any new locations. The casino was there in the first place.
Yeah,
in fact,
but
there were two of them and I cut it down to one. So if there's... if their problem is there's not enough psychological detail or description, then we just, it's easy. We just find someone and they put it back in. They put it back in, right?
I think they'd like to push the shoot back another month, so we've got time to figure it out.
Yeah, well, if they push, they're going to lose half the cast. They know that, right?
On a blue sign with a bow and arrow, Bora.
In 100 meters, on Forovichen, stay to the right. Stay to the right.
He turns onto a dock. Then into a barge. He swerves to the right around stopped cars and parks.
I'm coming.
He smiles. She digs through a bag by her feet. Walks along a yellow gunwale with blue railing. The ocean extends on the other side of the rail to the shore. She leans into the man's ear.
Okay.
I left my sunglasses at the airport.
He offers her his sunglasses.
Thank you.
She wears them. He kisses her neck. They wrap their arms around each other, then walk to a red and white gate at the end of the barge. They lean over the gate. They look from the ocean at the dock. Words appear. Vicky Creeps. Tim Roth. The barge sails. Mia Wasikowska. Anders Danielsson Lee. The woman sits in the driver's seat. The man takes the passenger seat. Hampus Nordensen. Ellen Lundqvist. The woman adjusts the rearview mirror. Kirsten Brunberg. Anki Larsson. Stig Bjorkman. Melinda Kinneman. The gate opens and the cars exit the barge. Joel Spira. Clara Strouch. Siri Hjorten Wagner. Albin Grenholm. Gabe Plinger. Jordi Costa. Lily Taleb. Wouter Hendricks. And Grace Del Rue. The woman turns off a street. She drives along a foliage-lined road. In a yellow field, a white shack with chipped paint and a thatch roof sits. A field stone wall stretches around it toward a forest. A film by Mia Hansen-Love. They drive past it. A title, Bergman Island.
In 100 meters, you will reach your destination.
Oh, that has got to be her.
On the side of the road, a white-haired woman wearing a turquoise shirt waves. They turn onto a grassy dirt path toward a field stone wall. The woman follows.
You didn't get lost.
Miracle of GPS.
Ah, good. Because no one here would have helped you. There is a secret pact between the people of Fore and Bergman.
Good to know.
Åsa.
Tony.
Nice to meet you.
And you.
Åsa.
Chris.
I take care of the houses.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. In that house, you find Bergman's private screening room, where you can see 35mm prints during Bergman week.
Wow.
They eye a white house with red doors and trim.
You're free to use the bicycles.
Oh, nice.
And if you want to go to Lauter to visit Bergman's home, it's a 10-minute bike ride from here.
Fantastic.
They ascend porch stairs. Inside a house.
This is the living room. And this TV, it's very, very old, but it works. This was Cabby Larrate's piano, his fourth wife. She was a great pianist.
The red-haired woman stares at a curved white staircase.
You'll see, this place is perfect for working.
Sure.
She enters the living room.
It's a very simple house, easy to live in. The bedrooms are upstairs. The big one was in Scenes from a Marriage, the film that made millions of people divorce. Oh, I have to show you for the garbage. In Sweden, we are very serious about recycling.
A white-haired woman turns through a doorway. The red-haired woman follows. The man pauses at the front door and adjusts a suitcase handle. Outside, the white-haired woman sits in a yellow truck and reverses. She drives away. Wind blows through green trees that line the field stone wall in front of the house. Inside, the red-haired woman climbs the staircase. She steps through turquoise paneled doors into a bedroom with a peaked roof. She gazes toward a window. She steps around a white bed with a brass-tipped frame. Two suitcases rest beneath the window. She removes sunglasses. She crosses to an office. The man unpacks a notebook onto a desk.
Go somewhere else if you want.
She gazes out a window. In a closet, the man hangs a green sweater. He grabs two books from an open suitcase. He sets them on the shelf of a nightstand beside the bed. He descends the stairs. He glances around corners. The double doors of the front entrance hang open.
Chris?
He meanders outside, onto the porch.
Chris!
In front of the house, he scans the surroundings. The gray hatchback sits parked beyond the field's stone wall.
Chris!
Tony gazes around the side of the house. Chris waves from a second-story window in a white building with a yellow windmill. He enters through a blue door. In the mill, he ascends stairs.
Wait.
Hey. I think I'll be setting up here. We can wave at each other.
Sitting on a desk at the window, she waves. Tony puts his arm around her.
Wow.
Through the window, upstairs windows on the house hang open.
Don't you think it's too nice to...
To what?
She shakes her head.
Beautiful. All this calm and perfection. I find it oppressive.
Soothing.
Yeah, but I didn't realize, you know, writing here. How can I not feel like a loser? I'm even afraid to sit at a desk.
Right outside, then.
A lot of people come here to work. Students, writers, designers.
No one's expecting persona.
Yeah, well, thank God for that.
He sits on a bed. Chris latches the window shut.
Did you realize we're going to sleep in the bed where they shot scenes from a marriage? A film that made millions of people divorce.
I know.
We have to maybe sleep in the other bedroom.
Separate beds?
No.
At the ocean side, Chris wears a backless brown one-piece bathing suit. She carefully strolls along a flat, rocky shore. Water laps the edge of the rock. Yellow moss grows on submerged portions. On blocky gray stone above the water, Tony sits. He wears boots, khakis, and a dark long-sleeve shirt. Chris kneels at the edge of the ocean. She swirls her hand beneath the water. She tosses water on her wrists, then over her shoulder onto her back. She shakes her hands and faces the ocean.
Enjoy!
She scowls behind her. She adjusts a strap, then dives. Tony grins. Chris breaststrokes through the water. She turns on her back and kicks. On a road, Tony drives. He parks in a line of cars near a field stone wall. Tony and Chris walk hand in hand to a building lined with tables, wooden chairs, and bundled umbrellas. A white-haired, balding man approaches them.
Tony! See you. Nice to see you.
Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
And this is Hedda, who's the head of the Bergman Foundation. And
it's an honor to meet you.
Berit, who is in charge of the Bergman Week.
After all the emails. Nice to meet you. He said it would be easier to divide the money than homes.
Nine children.
Nine?
Nine.
From six different women.
Didn't it bother him that everything would be sold to strangers?
He wasn't sentimental. He lived in the present.
Tony nods.
Did he believe in God? I mean, it was complicated, I'm sure, but did he ever talk about it?
He always said that death was just a light going out. That changed after Ingrid died. Bergman believed in ghosts more than anything. When you live alone on a remote island, you know. He felt Ingrid's presence in the house. He said she was there. He was absolutely convinced of it.
The table ready for you inside now.
Thank you.
They follow the hostess inside, carrying glasses of red and white wine. Chris pauses by the door, empty-handed. She grabs her glass from the table and downs it. Inside...
How was his relationship with his children?
He didn't see much of them when they were young. He wasn't much of a family man, to put it mildly. For years, one of his daughters didn't even know he was a father.
You can sit down now.
Then there was a big reunion at his 60th birthday. Ingrid had persuaded him to invite everybody. Ingrid was adamant about reconstructing Bergman's relationship with his family.
They sit at a circular table covered with a white cloth. A candle burns on it.
So, do you think you can't create a great body of work and raise a family at the same time?
A body of work of that scope. At the age of 42, Bergman had directed 25 films, run a theater, staged many plays. How do you think he would have done that if he was also changing diapers?
How do you feel about that?
In practical terms, raising 9 kids, directing 50 films, not to mention the plays, seems like a tall order.
Yeah, but in non-practical terms, the mother's raised all the 9 kids and he didn't do a thing. How do you feel about that?
I should feel bad, right?
No, it's just because you like him so much, I'm wondering.
Yeah, you do too.
It's true that a woman couldn't have done the same thing.
I mean, I would like to have 9 kids from 5 different men.
That's nice.
Bearded smiles.
It's just I like a certain coherence. I don't like it when artists I love don't behave well in real life.
So you have your answer, Chris. Bergman was as cruel in his art as in his life.
Right. Still.
Chris leans her head on her hand. In the bedroom, Tony reads in bed. His hand obscures a title, The Inferno. Through a bathroom doorway, Chris brushes her teeth. She wears blue underwear and a blue shirt. She smiles and turns on a faucet in a sink. Chris jumps, grins, and covers her mouth. She cups water in her hand and rinses. She dries her hands and mouth. She shuts off a light. She removes her watch and climbs into bed. She covers her face with a blanket. Holding his glasses in his hand, Tony stares at her. He moves her arm aside. He covers her face with the Inferno, then holds his glasses. Daytime. In the office. Tony writes in the notebook. In the mill, at the desk, Chris writes in a journal. She nods.
Wanna come?
No.
Oh. You wanna see the Bergman Center?
I see it tomorrow.
Okay. Fine.
Good luck!
He waves. At the stone wall, he bikes past the hatchback, then up the dirt path. He turns onto the road past the White House with a red trim. In the mill, a wooden clock with Roman numerals hangs. Chris scratches at her journal with a fountain pen. She shakes it, uncaps an end, then unscrews the middle portion. She thumbs through a pencil bag. Outside, she walks away from the mill. She enters a side door and passes through the kitchen to the entryway. She climbs upstairs. In the office. She reaches into a box of ink packages. She grabs an ink packet. On the desk lies a book with a red cover. She opens it. On the first page, the letter F. Scribbled notes fill the next pages. Underlined phrases read, psychoanalysis, women as salvation. She scans the notes with her finger. Sketches fill a page. A bare-chested woman sits on rocks by water. A nude woman rests her butt against railing. Sketches between notes. A naked woman lies bound. A faceless woman wears black straps. A man stuffs his face between a woman's butt cheeks. A couple makes love on a tilted table. Red crayon circles words, then points an arrow. Chris's finger pauses by underlined words. Demonia resurfaces. An arrow points in the corner. On the next page, below, who are you? Chains bind a woman's arms behind her back, a hook in her anus. Beneath the sketch, you or me? In the mill. Chris sits by the desk. She tosses the ink onto the desk. Outside, subtitles. Mum?
Yeah,
I'd really like it if you'd call me back to tell me how June is. Thanks. Bye. She hangs up and gazes toward trees. On the road, Tony bikes onto the dirt path. Inside the house.
Hey.
How did it go?
It was good. People were nice. It's great to see the silence there. I talk too much, but...
He kisses her.
Want some tea?
I'd love some, yeah.
Chris opens a cabinet and pulls out a mug. Tony sits at a table with a black teapot on it. Chris pours tea into the mug.
I miss June.
Oh. I got a video from your mum.
I didn't.
I know, but that's because I'm a favorite.
She sits on his lap.
Okay.
He opens a cell phone video. She holds the phone. She smiles. Dusk. Inside the red-trimmed house, film reels fill racks. A blonde man holds a door open.
From The Life of Marion, it's pretty hardcore Bergman there.
Yeah, but that's the German one. I'd like to see a Swedish one. Like a summer film.
Not Monica.
Yeah, Monica, please.
I see it too often. After the rehearsal?
Fanny and Alexander.
Same thing, I know, I don't remember by heart.
Seven Seal.
I can't stand that one.
But it's his most famous one, and I haven't seen it.
Arrow the Wolf.
No, that's the one where the child's head gets bashed against the boulder. No, if we don't see Seven Seal, then at least a nice one.
There's no such thing.
Then we download a film. You wanted to see Everest. It's easier.
Source.
I know. Saraband.
Yeah, Saraband.
I don't have that one.
Ah, fuck.
Or else I have a 35mm print. We showed it earlier, and it's going back to Stockholm tomorrow.
What film?
Cries and Whispers.
Oh. You wanted a nice Bergman.
In a theater.
All right, you can sit anywhere you want, but not in that seat on the first row. It has to stay empty because it's Bergman's.
Tony raises his eyebrows.
Right.
Thanks.
The blonde man threads a reel of film in a projector. Chris and Tony sit. She bites her lip, then switches seats from Tony's right to his left. The film plays. On screen, Cries and Whispers. En filmerie, Ingmar Bergman. The blonde man watches credits on the projection booth window.
Förlåt, Mia. Jag bara pratar, förstår du? Nej, det är inte sant det heller.
On screen, subtitles appear. Maria, look at me. Two women converse. They rub each other's faces, their lips inches apart. Outside, Chris opens an umbrella. Tony pushes on the door. It sticks. Chris and he shut it together. She offers him the umbrella. He takes her hand. She smiles. They walk from the house sharing the umbrella. In the bedroom.
It's like a horror movie without catharsis.
Your point being?
Well, usually when you come out of a horror movie, you feel reassured because you know what you just saw can't happen to you. Not with Cries and Whispers. Solitude, the agony, the horror of dying. It's the way things are.
No, it's not. It's a dream. More like a fucking nightmare.
But I just hope he had more fun in his life than in his movies.
Me too.
Tony brushes his teeth. Chris rinses hers.
Why are his characters always so awful? Why doesn't he ever show any tenderness or lightness?
Well, there's loads in the Pony Alexander.
True. But that came late.
Yeah, but it's good that it came late, right? He wasn't interested in being light. He was dark, and he wanted to explore that. It was fun for him.
Chris removes a grey sweater.
Why didn't he ever once want to explore...
happiness?
Yeah, happiness. I mean, look at this place. His houses, the island, beautiful landscapes. Everything is less harsh than in his movies.
I'll try this place in fucking January.
No, thank you.
She crawls into bed, then Tony beside her. He removes the blanket from her face.
What's the matter?
Movies can be terribly sad, tough, violent. But in the end, they do you good.
Yes, don't?
No, it just hurt me.
And why do you watch them then?
She shrugs.
Because I love them. I just don't know why, that's all.
He removes her watch. She sets it on a nightstand. She backs into him, and they spoon. Nighttime. On a road, a teenaged girl runs. She carries a knife. A car's headlights shine behind her. She glances over her shoulder and runs harder.
Gina!
She tries a doorknob.
Oh, please! Anybody in here?
She bangs a window.
Please! Please, I'm in danger! Please! Someone!
She runs around the building.
Gina!
Gina weaves between metal scaffolding. Green light bathes a construction site. She hides behind barrels. In a theater, an audience watches. On screen, the man approaches. Gina stabs him. In the theater, Chris gazes at the screen. On screen, the man falls to his knees. Gina clutches his shoulder. In the theater, Chris leaves. In a rec room.
Almost over.
How's it doing?
Don't you ever watch your movies again?
No, I hate it.
Bergman used to say that hell to him would be if he had to watch his own movies over and over again.
I agree.
The credits just started, so we can move inside.
Okay.
They enter the theater. Birgit carries a microphone. Stieg carries papers. Tony walks to the front of the audience and waves.
Please welcome again Anthony Sanders.
Tony sits between Birgit and Stieg in wooden chairs.
All of my life, I felt like I was on a tightrope, you know, I was kind of balancing. And if I fell off, I'd be lost. I'd be completely gone. And so as a filmmaker, I only really felt secure, I suppose, and comfortable if the central character of the story that I was telling at that particular time was female.
The women, they keep you in touch with reality, but at the same time, they are the ones who pull you into fiction. They drive the action most of your films.
But the women do, yeah.
Chris exits. She walks into a room lined with filled bookcases. She passes a bust of an armless woman's upper body to a black and white portrait of a man. She stares at the bust. It wears a toga. Its red eyes shift as she passes it.
Hey.
Hey.
Chris walks to a bookcase. Sunglasses rest on a clear display stand. She dons them. In a mirror, a man with long blonde hair and glasses stands behind her near movies. He eyes her. She glances toward a framed picture of a model wearing the sunglasses. She removes them and smiles.
Hey, can I get these?
Yeah, sure. 800 crowns, please.
The blonde man exits. Outside, a bus turns into a parking lot. On its side, Bergman Safari. Chris strolls. On a building for a museum. She walks from the gravel lot to the roadside. At a gate, Chris fiddles with the lock. The blonde man stands among tombstones on the other side.
The lost. Over there. Have to go around.
Oh, thank you.
Chris rounds a stone wall. The man approaches her.
How are things for Bibi's glasses?
Much better.
Hampus.
Chris.
You doing the residency?
Yeah, well, with my friend, Anthony Sanders. And you?
Me too. I'm working on my short graduation film here. But I know Fora. My grandparents are from here.
Inside a church, Hampus and Chris walk down an aisle. Chris moves her sunglasses to the top of her head. Rows decorated with blue floral wreaths line the aisle. At the end, an altar with red doors sits behind it. Three chandeliers hang in a row.
I was supposed to stay until mid-August, but I'm leaving tomorrow to see my grandfather. He's dying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, he's old.
I'd like to see Bergman's grave. Do you know where it is?
Sure. Come on.
Outside.
Saw your last film in Gothenburg with my girlfriend.
Oh.
Besides, just the theater was empty, and we got in a fight afterwards because I liked it and she didn't. She hated it. We broke up afterwards.
Over the movie?
No, not over the movie.
They walk along a hedge past rows of graves. They turn with the hedge toward a wall. In shade, an engraved stone sits on a plot of dirt, alone. Flowers grow in front of it. Chris raises her sunglasses to her forehead. On the stone, Ingrid Bergman, 1930 to 1995. Ingmar Bergman, 1918 to 2007. Chris looks over the wall, then sits on it.
Bergman directed his own death. He decided everything in advance. The spot, the wood of the coffin, and what he'd wear.
Hedda from the foundation said that after his wife died, he started believing in an afterlife.
He was the son of a minister, so the question of fate always followed him. Oh, Gud, varför har du övergivit mig? Oh, God, why have you abandoned me? But nobody in Sweden really cares now.
Hampus sits beside Chris. She checks her watch.
Oh, fuck. I'm supposed to do the Bergman Safari.
Bergman Safari, you can skip that.
Yeah, it's for Tony. He didn't want to do it alone.
If you want to see the Bergman spots, I can show them to you. I can also show you others, ones you'd never see on the safari.
Yeah?
At the theater.
It was fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry,
thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tony autographs a program.
There you are.
Thank you so very much. Oh. It was fascinating. Oh. I admire everything you do.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So can we have a photo, please?
A man takes a selfie with Tony.
I just love your work.
Thank you.
You're great.
Thank you very much.
Can I please have your photo? You're my favorite director. You're the reason why I started studying cinema.
Thank you.
It's very pleasure.
Thanks.
Tony walks to a staircase and glances out a window. In a car.
I have some cider. It's local cider. It's delicious. It's in the back. Can you open it?
Sure.
She reaches into the back and grabs a green bottle. The cider bubbles over. She swallows the suds.
Where are we going?
Hampus takes the bottle and drinks.
I was thinking Ulahau to start.
Ulahau?
They round a bend. In the Fora Museum parking lot.
Hello, everyone. I think that we're all here, so we can get going. My name is Felicia, and I'm happy to be your guide for the annual Bergman Safari. My two colleagues, Vivian and Maiken, are going to help me out. It is a nice sunny day, which is a great plus. For those of you who downloaded the app on your iPhones, now is the time to start it. With it, you'll be able to follow our journey on the map of Fora. Now, if you all come onto the bus.
I didn't introduce you earlier. Francisco Molina, Anthony Sanders. Francisco teaches at University of Barcelona and was the hands-down winner of last night's Bergman quiz.
Wow.
Yeah. Shall we?
Yeah.
They stroll toward the bus. On Tony's phone, he sends a text. You're not coming? Glancing over his shoulder, he climbs onto the bus. On the bus, Tony sits beside an empty seat.
Tittar man riktigt länge med huvudet böjt bakåt eller åt sidan, så kan det bli ganska högt. Fast
The safari goers gaze out the window toward the ocean. At a gravel turnout, Pampas parks. Chris wears a backpack. On a tombstone, Marcus Larsen, 1855 to 1941. They amble past a nature reserve sign. They hike up a forested trail.
This place came to be around 1700. And the people started cutting down the trees, and the sand would blow in from the north, creating these dunes in the clearings. Ulao means the rolling dunes, because people thought this meant Judgment Day was coming. And they used to say in that Ulao, the Sandeata, er inte långt till dum. Which means that when Ulao and Sandeha meet, Judgment Day is near. And then a man planted many new trees, stopping more sand from coming in. But the dunes that were already here, they remained.
Atop a dune, Chris carries her shoes. She drops her backpack, then runs down the dune. She glances toward Hampus and dives onto the sand. He follows. She lies on her back.
This makes me want to go to the beach.
It's no problem.
A nice sandy beach.
There's two of them, the North Beach and the South Beach. The South Beach is large with big waves, but it's more touristy. North has no tourist, no wind, the water is clear. Lots of jellyfish.
No way.
Yeah, but they're harmless. And the South does have a few which are stingers. Much, much worse.
By field stone walls, the tour guide leads the safari.
So, the house in the film was here. Actually, they only built the facade and the interiors were mostly shot in studio.
What happened to the house?
Well, they had to tear it down after the shoot. Bergman was looking for a small garden with old trees, and that's part of why he picked the spot. The trees are still here, and you can also see where they took down the wall. Here you can see that the wall has been replaced all the way to here. So the stones are different. These are the ones they used when they rebuilt the wall. And if you look over here,
Tony photographs the wall. The guide paces toward the ocean.
You can see where the jetty once was built. So that was like the foundation of the jetty. And this tree is actually also in the movie, but it was really small then. So it has grown a lot since the film was made about 60 years ago. When Bergman arrived on Fore, something happened. It was love at first sight. Bergman was dazzled by the island's beauty. It was as if he had found his own landscape, one that already existed inside of him.
Tony stares toward the sea. On a road, Hampus drives a blue station wagon. He turns onto a dirt road and parks beneath trees. On Chris's phone, a text from Tony. Nice to have stood me up for the Bergman Safari. By the ocean, the safari goers walk.
Before making Persona, Bergman had been hospitalized, suffering both mental and physical exhaustion. But after Persona, he was as happy as ever. Persona incarnates this transition and this fullness. Bergman never forgot it. He said that Persona was the film that saved his life.
On a road, the bus drives past the shore. Patches of grass descend from the roadside toward the water. Rock pillars jut in a cluster near the water.
Is it shame or the shame?
In Swedish, it's skamme, which means the shame. But the English title is shame, I think.
Oddly enough, in the UK, it was released as the shame.
The group explores near the rock pillars. on Tony's phone, a text. Don't be mad. Your masterclass was dragging on forever. See you, left carrot, at home, right carrot, later. Enjoy the Bergman Safari. Heart emojis.
Bergman knew that he would receive a lot of criticism for evoking Vietnam in this manner, because the debate in Sweden about the war was very black and white. His film is extremely great.
On a beach, Hampus wades in. He wears shorts. Chris follows.
You see? Jellyfish.
In the water, translucent jellyfish with pink tentacles float. Hampus lifts one, then flings it toward Chris. She throws one at Hampus. He dodges and tosses one back. They splash each other. Water drenches Chris's gray tank top and underwear. They dive into the water. In the car, Chris holds the empty cider bottle.
Would you like to buy some lambskin?
Yeah.
Hampus reverses. At a shack, white, gray, and black lambskins hang from wooden frames.
I can't choose.
For the black long-haired ones. But they're more expensive.
Chris rubs a black skin. At a long table, the safari goers sit.
So, guys, we traditionally end the Burma safari by having a lamb burger. Is everyone up for it?
Yes.
Okay, great. Otherwise, you could have a veggie burger.
Island, comprising of Hour of the Wolf, Shame, Passion of Anna. Bergman didn't see them that way.
Yeah, but he didn't consider Through a Glass Darkly, The Silence, and Winter Light as a trilogy, and yet some critics still see them as a trilogy about the loss of faith.
I mean, he definitely said they were a trilogy, but then walked it back.
And just because he said it's a trilogy doesn't mean it is one.
Yeah, true.
On a road, Hampus parks.
Thank you for the Hampus Safari.
Hope you enjoyed it.
I loved it.
Don't forget your sheepskins.
Chris walks around to the driver's side door.
See you.
Bye.
At the house, Chris drops a black, a gray, and a white sheepskin on an ottoman.
It's very chic. Thanks for the support.
I saw the bus and I freaked out. Sorry.
That's what.
She lies on a couch beside Tony.
How was it?
It was pretty good, actually. Yeah. But I've been feeling a bit yuck since I got back.
Why? What happened?
Must have been a burger. Oh.
He purses his lips.
So, where were you?
Driving around.
Oh, yeah? Driving around?
Mm. I met a guy.
Oh, you met a guy, did you?
Student.
Oh, student, was he?
Film student from Stockholm.
Oh. Was he handsome? Was he sexy, was he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he brilliant when he talked about Bergman?
Not like you, but his clumsiness has his charm.
Mm. Thanks. Shut up.
In the office, the mill is seen through the window. Tony scrolls on a laptop touchpad. He prints a document labeled manuscript. The printer spits a page onto a tray. In the top corner of the page, 110, 109. At the mill, Chris gazes out the window. She turns. She grabs the clock off the wall. She removes a battery, then places the clock on a counter. She lies down. She lifts and drops her head. She rests her hands behind her head. In the house, upstairs, Tony sits in his office. Chris ascends the stairs, enters, then closes the bedroom door. Bare legs exit the bedroom. Chris wears underwear and a white and pink striped button-down. She pads toward the office. She opens the lid of a box on the desk, then shuts it. She fiddles with a wooden duck on a windowsill. She smiles. Carrying the duck, she opens a book on the desk. Tony stares at her. She walks around him. She scans the desk.
Looking for something?
She balances the duck on the manuscript, opening her shirt to reveal her bare chest. She exits. Outside, Chris bikes down a path. She stops at a wooden gate connecting two stone walls. She props the bike against a wall. She unlatches the gate, swings it back, steps through, and latches it shut behind her. She walks down a path. At the shore, Chris wanders across stones and flat rocks. She hikes up a hill, away from the shore. She holds a map. She folds it, then opens it. She walks along a cliffside, then near a stone wall. A path stretches along the wall. She glances down a road. People approach from the other direction.
Hey, hi. I'm looking for the house from Through Glass Darkly. Bergman's film.
Two men look at a woman with a cane.
Sorry, I don't understand English. Ingmar Bergman? The filmmaker who lived on the island.
Sorry.
They continue down the path. One shakes his head. Thanks. Chris checks her phone. On screen, no internet connection.
Oh, come on.
She holds her phone out. At the stone walls, Chris hops over the wall. She dashes through the rain to her bike. She grabs the bike and pedals. At the house, she parks the bike against another bike. She runs up the stairs. Inside,
gonna have lunch?
She enters the office doorway, her water-soaked shirt turning translucent.
Yikes.
She stomps toward the bedroom. Tony holds papers and a pen.
I went to see the house from Through Glass Darkly, but I couldn't find it.
There isn't one. Never was.
What? But the picture on the map.
They built a facade and they shot the interiors in a studio. Bergman Safari, babes.
Chris lies down. She wears a red long sleeve. In the kitchen.
How's it going? Where are you at?
Still doing the outline, but I don't know if I want to write it.
Why not?
Because I'm afraid it's like stuff I've already done.
Not possible.
I thought we spend all our lives saying the same thing.
We do, but from different perspectives. You just got to trust yourself.
Carrying salad bowls, they cross from the kitchen to the table and sit.
Characters, the dialogues, the situations, it all fits. Something is holding me back. Something is making me anxious.
Oh, well, that's different. If it's making you anxious, take a break.
You just said write. Now you say don't write. That doesn't help. It's not easy. You know how hard writing is for me? It's torture. It's self-inflicted agony. It's blood from a stone.
Well, then do something else.
She glares at him.
Yeah, like what? Full-time housewife?
Well, it's an honorable profession.
At a kitchen sink, Chris pours steaming potatoes in a bowl. She carries it to the table.
You know, there's no reason writing has to be so difficult for you. You're not 15. You've outgrown that.
Well, maybe I am, because I haven't.
She sits and serves the potatoes.
Write something else.
It's not like I have a ton of projects lined up in my head. I really thought you would encourage me.
I'm trying. You know I love your work.
How's your thing going?
Pretty good, actually.
What's it about?
It's about, how invisible things circulate within a couple.
And the story? Why don't you ever tell me anything? I tell you everything.
Don't want to jinx it.
Oh.
She nods.
And can you tell me where it takes place?
Here.
Here? Fora?
Yeah.
Don't say that like I'm supposed to know.
Well, I thought you did.
No, I don't, because you don't tell me anything.
Tony purses his lips. They eat.
I've got a title.
Mm. It's in Cuba, Joseph.
Nighttime. In bed, Tony reads. Chris lies on her back. Her eyes open. She turns on her side and faces away from him. He sets the book face down on the bed, removes his glasses, and pats her side.
What's the matter?
She holds his hand. She shakes her head. Her nostrils flare and her brow furrows.
Is this script?
She shakes her head. Her lips quiver and her eyelids flutter.
Miss June, you want to go home?
Sure.
She nods. She shuts her eyes. Fade to black. Daytime. Light bathes a forest-ringed field. Beyond trees, the ocean glimmers. Beyond it, trees fill the mainland. At the desk in the mill, Chris writes on paper. The end of a sentence. A way to leave. She caps the fountain pen. She slips the paper to the back of a stack of handwritten pages. She types on a laptop. The white dress. On a dirt road, Tony and Chris stroll.
Can I tell you about what I'm writing?
Yeah.
It's the last episode of a longer story, so maybe it's too flimsy and not enough for a movie, but I would like your opinion.
Okay.
Okay. So it takes place over 3 days at a wedding. I don't know where yet, but maybe a place like here, like Fora. An island actually would work very well. And it could start in a plane. Or maybe on a boat.
A ship in the ocean.
So we're on a ferry in the Baltic Sea from the mainland to Gotland. It's a 4-hour ride. And it's spring. Or maybe it should be summer. It's late summer. A young woman looks into the distance. Her name is Amy. She's about my age, or maybe a bit younger. Let's say she's 28.
Amy rests her hands on the railing.
She's the main character of the film. She arrived in Stockholm that morning from New York. She's come for the wedding of an old friend, Nicolette, who's marrying a Swede named Jonas. The celebration takes place on an island off the northern tip of Gotland, an island called for her, which is highly insignificant to Amy, as she's a director.
All right.
And Bergman occupies a very important place in her imagination. For many, he is a formidable reference, but for her, he is sort of refuge, a consolation.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's not him she's thinking about right now. Another man is monopolizing her thoughts. Joseph is his name. Joseph she can't let go. Amy was 15 when she met Joseph, who was 17. They loved each other passionately and awkwardly, like teenagers do. And they tore each other to pieces. Joseph left Amy the day she turned 18. They each went their own ways, but Amy never forgot Joseph. When they saw each other again years later, they realized that their feelings were still there. The attraction was still overwhelming. They became lovers. They were more mature, understood each other better, but circumstances had changed, and there was no place in their lives for this love story anymore. The first time had been too soon, second too late. So they gave up and stopped seeing each other. I'd like this film to be the last chapter of their story, which was just a series of failures and betrayals and dramas. The story of impossible mourning, of suffering, overshadowed by a few memories of intense happiness.
Amy walks through rows of seated passengers.
So following Nicolette's advice, Amy met up with two of Jonas's friends.
Yes.
They were going to Fordo by car from Stockholm. Joseph did the same thing, though he started out from Oslo.
Amy sits. Next to her, Joseph sleeps.
And so, after several years apart, the two lovers find themselves sitting in the back seat of the car, driven by total strangers. Vilma and Peter don't know of Joseph's and Amy's past. By tacit agreement, they play dumb. Out of bashfulness, or as a game, they pretend they vaguely know each other. This charade only increases Amy's desire.
Will you be spending any time in Sweden after the wedding?
No, I'm heading straight back. I promised my daughter.
Oh, sweet. How old?
She's 4.
Gorgeous.
What about you?
No kids.
I mean, are you staying in Sweden after?
No. I have to go right back, actually. Duty calls. Is it a problem if I don't have a tie for church? I was going to buy one at the airport, but I forgot.
No, it's fine.
I was also wondering, I realized the dress I plan to wear, it's white. It's my only nice dress.
Well, usually only the bride wears white.
Shit.
I mean, you're going to have to ask Nicolette. She probably won't mind.
Actually, I don't know that it's really white. It's more like off-white or cream, kind of beige.
Joseph smiles. Amy looks out a window. At a yellow barge, Joseph and Amy exit the car. They walk past lines of cars toward a red and white gate.
You want to go to the upper deck?
They ascend stairs, gripping blue railing. Joseph holds a camera toward the water. He turns the camera toward Amy. She leans on the railing.
I saw your movie.
Oh.
You know that guy?
Wait, which guy?
The one who plays me.
Ah. Yeah. What about
him? I'm much better.
Really? In what ways?
In all departments. Physically, to start with. Most of all, as a person. He's a prick.
Damn, I thought I'd idealized you.
Idealized? Okay. I hope you're kidding.
They lock eyes. In the car, they exit the barge.
We've been to Visby once, to the medieval week. What? They have like a medieval themed week where they...
You went to that?
Of course.
Did you do reenactments?
I know.
What do you mean?
Albatross. We're here.
On the side of the road, a person wearing a turquoise shirt bikes. They turn onto a dirt road lined with barrels in a house.
Jonas? Nicolette?
They ascend stairs.
Nicolette?
In a room, a woman holds shoes.
Maybe.
Nicolette?
In a mirror, Nicolette wears a white dress.
You can't see my dress.
Okay, sorry.
Really? We found her in the dress.
In a yellow dress, Nicolette enters.
Hey! How are you?
Oh, good. Frantic.
Not too nervous.
Yes, a bit, but compared to you,
I can imagine.
Where are you staying? Oh, I'm at Sudersend. And you?
I'm here in Albatross. I even got the Bergman suite.
I'm very jealous.
Yeah, well, the toilet's in the garden. That's any consolation.
Okay, good.
People hug.
Hey!
Hey!
How are you?
Joseph and Damie stand side by side. He gazes at her.
I think we're down here.
Outside, they point toward a house.
See you.
Wilma and Peter wheel suitcases across grass. Amy walks along a path. In a house, Amy crosses an entryway. Bunk beds rest in a room around the corner. She returns to a staircase at the entrance and climbs. Upstairs, she drops bags on a bed. She lifts a white dress by shoulder straps. She hangs it on a hanger over a doorway. At an outdoor dinner, she sits at a long table.
My grandparents grew up here, so I spent my summer vacations here. Yeah, so I know every inch.
Did you meet Bergman?
Bergman. Why is Sweden always synonymous with Bergman?
No, come on. You're getting married in Fora. It's kind of his island.
Oh, his island? I don't know. You've seen any of his movies?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Which one?
A lot of them. Mm-hmm. Do you know where his house is? I'd really like to see it.
Till Lauter.
Hold on. Can you spell it?
L-A-U-T-E-R. That's the main one, the one where he lived until his death. You'll find it on a map.
She writes on and tears a napkin.
Thanks.
My father was so patriarchal. I mean, who hasn't had a patriarchal father? I'm just saying Bergman did not have a hard time. You know what happened when he got enlisted in the Swedish Army during World War II? He got an ulcer. That's what he got.
Oh, no. Not the demons again.
I mean, who gets an ulcer for being enlisted in the Swedish Army during World War II? We were neutral.
Oh, no. I can't fight in the war. I have to fight my inner demons because my daddy put up scary paintings on our walls.
Come on. Fine, maybe three critics thought he was amazing. But there's a world outside your own asshole. Fuck Bergman. Oh, and to answer your question, no, I never met Bergman, but my grandparents used to bump into him at the grocery store, and they found him terribly unpleasant.
Amy purses her lips.
Maybe he just didn't like grocery shopping. I'm gonna go for a smoke.
Yeah.
Amy walks toward a field stone wall topped with lit candles.
Do you have a cigarette?
Nicolette opens a pack and hands Amy a cigarette.
Thanks.
Nicolette nods. Joseph flicks a lighter and lights her cigarette.
Nicolette, I wanted to ask. I realized the dress I planned on wearing for the wedding.
Yes. It's white? Or off-white, like a kind of beige? Is it a problem?
It depends. Is it white or beige?
Off-white? I guess someone without a very sophisticated sense of nuance might think it's white.
You don't have any others?
I do. They're just not as elegant.
I can lend you one.
Okay.
Wine glasses and plates fill rows of tables covered with white cloth. People sit in a circle assembling a joint.
Good evening.
Amy puffs the cigarette. For the world to come to you, the secret's in motion. There's not a lot that I can do. She stands and offers it to a woman. She pads away from the circle toward a hammock. Joseph lies on his back in the hammock.
What are you doing?
Looking at the stars.
I'm gonna go.
Okay. How?
I rented a bike.
He sits up.
Do you think you can ride it?
She leans against a tree. On a gravel path.
You're not inviting me up to the garden suite?
We're not free, Mrs. Bergwoman. Need I remind you?
First of all, don't call me Mrs. I'm not married. And secondly, don't patronize me.
As Amy reaches for her bike, Joseph pulls her into a kiss.
Is that all?
You're the one who doesn't want to.
Me?
Yeah, I can tell.
You pulled away.
They kiss. He holds her head in his hands.
Will you come pick me up by bike tomorrow morning?
Okay.
She grabs her bike. On the dirt road.
So the first night goes by. Are you listening?
Uh-huh.
You spaced out.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
They open a gate, then meander toward the ocean.
So, the first night goes by painfully for Amy. And the next morning, as late as she can bear, so very early, she goes to pick up Joseph.
On a road, Amy bikes.
She reaches Albatross, crosses the garden to the Berkman suite.
She knocks on a window. Shirtless, Joseph opens it.
Hi.
Hi. Shall we go?
Yeah.
He walks to a nightstand and pulls on pants. On a forested road, they bike.
They have the day off, so they decide to go for a bike ride. They were told they should go and see the Raukar, these huge pillars sculptured by the sea, scattered along the northern coast.
At the Raukar, Joseph snaps a photo. He ascends a slope. Amy grabs a rock from the ground. As Joseph glances down and winds his camera, Amy hides behind a pillar. He looks up and squints. She throws the rock. He smiles and snaps a photo. She strolls from behind the pillar. She throws a rock. She jogs.
They continue their bike ride, passing through Halgumanen, a former fishing village.
They bike down a slope along the shoreline toward a village with brown buildings. Amy leans against a building wall. Joseph strolls past tethered boats toward her. He smiles.
I feel like you're going to pounce on me.
No one is forcing you to be here with me.
I know.
In the ocean, they swim. By a shrub, Joseph holds a blanket. Amy removes clothes behind it. She dons a white shirt. They eye each other. He smiles. Under a tree, they lie together holding hands.
At sunset, they part ways.
They turn different directions on their bikes.
Amy hopes to hear from Joseph, but no word comes.
In a church.
It's not until the next morning at the wedding ceremony that she finally sees him again.
Amy walks between blue paneled pews.
She has given up on the white dress.
She steps into an empty row.
The bride and groom march into the chapel.
They walk down the aisle, followed by children, a best man, a maid of honor, and a priest.
At Joseph, hoping he'll turn around. Tears roll down her face.
Her lips quiver.
Is it the emotions of the bride and groom rubbing off on her? The music? Her feelings for Joseph? Something else?
May these rings be the symbol of their promise of love and faithfulness.
Amen.
The priest descends from the chancel. He carries a red book and a ring.
Your solemn vows will now be exchanged.
Nicolette, I will love you. I will share joy and sorrows with you. And I will be faithful to you until death do us part.
Once the service is over, the guests get into a bus, which takes them to a large house by a lake where the reception is held.
The bride and groom join a group photo. Good. Are you ready? On the dance floor, a crowd of people bounce and wave. Nicolette and Joseph dance together. Across the crowd, Amy walks through a green archway. She crosses her arms. At a fire pit, the man with long blonde hair and glasses, Hampus, roasts marshmallows with children. He hands a child a marshmallow stick.
You want a marshmallow?
Sure.
He steps past her. Nighttime. Amy eats a marshmallow.
I stole a bottle.
Joseph holds two glasses and a bottle. He sits beside Amy.
It's Nicolette who dragged me along. You know her.
He offers Amy a glass.
Did you put that song on?
She sips. He drinks, then sets his glass by the bottle. He stands and dances in front of her. He smiles.
Come on.
She stands. They hold hands and sway side to side. They smile. She wraps her arms around him and leans her head against his chest. On board. As it drives, she leans her head on his shoulder. Amy sits up. Peter and Wilma carry bottles toward the exit.
Hey, we're going to the sauna at the beach if you want to join us.
Amy smiles and nods toward the door. At the sauna. What's Norwegian for dick? Peak. What's so funny about that?
Is that what?
Yes, it's peak. Holding a towel over her body, Amy exits the sauna. Smiling, she runs on a path toward the ocean. Joseph, Peter, and Wilma sprint past her. They all wade into the water. Joseph wears underwear. Wilma, Peter, and Amy wear nothing. Outside the sauna, towels tied around their waists, they carry shoes. Peter and Wilma stroll down the road. Amy and Joseph trek along a path toward the houses. At Amy's door, Joseph stands behind her and kisses her neck. Amy turns and leans up into his kiss.
Oh, shit.
Tony pulls his phone from a pocket.
Sorry.
Yep.
Tony steps away from a table. Chris stays seated, looking around, then watches him over her shoulder. Through a blur, he walks down a slope toward the water. In Amy's house, Joseph and Amy enter, kissing. He pulls her towel off. She leads him through the house, stops, and kisses him. She sits and pulls him toward her. She removes his towel.
Wait.
In a shower, Joseph joins Amy. He turns her. She rubs his backside. He holds her head. On the stairs, he climbs. Amy stands in the bedroom doorway. As they kiss, she backs onto the bed. He lies on top of her. He lies beside her.
Keep leaving.
I'll be right back.
She runs down the stairs. She returns wearing the white dress.
Well, do you like it?
Come closer. I can't see.
Wait. White or off-white?
Let me see.
He reaches up the base of her dress. Under the dress, he wraps his arms around to the back of her. He pulls the straps down over her shoulders, revealing her breasts.
You'll crinkle it.
He smiles. Morning.
Do you still enjoy it?
Enjoy what?
Making love with me.
Can't you tell?
Yeah, but I need you to say it.
I never mention you to my girlfriend, but she's jealous of you. Only you.
Why are there others?
Sometimes.
She lies on her back.
You're unfaithful, too.
I love two people. That's different.
I love you, too, but I also love Michelle, and I'm building something with her.
Amy gazes into his eyes.
Why her and not me?
I don't know. It's just life. You had a child.
She turns over onto her side, facing away from him.
I wanted one with you.
You wanted two children with two men at the same time. It was absurd.
Water dots her pillow.
Come here. Don't turn your back on me.
He caresses down her body.
No.
He nibbles her ear.
After everything you said, I don't feel like it anymore.
Yes, you do.
He kisses her cheek, then her neck. She turns onto her back, and they kiss. Through a blur, waves roll. Focusing, a bird flies over the water. Chris sits at the table. Tony approaches.
Sorry about that. So, where were we?
We just left the sauna.
Okay.
And that's when Joseph decides to go to Amy's. And you can imagine what happens.
Right.
At one point, she puts on the white dress.
Okay.
She wants to wear it for him. And then they make love again and again. And they fall asleep in each other's arms. But when they leave the house, Joseph's grown cold and distant.
They walk toward the gate.
Hi.
Amy and Joseph stroll onto a road.
Everybody obviously knows about us.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I do.
At an outdoor table, Joseph and Amy eat.
Are you angry?
No.
You are. You're upset with me.
I'm upset with myself.
Same thing.
What we did was wrong. It's a betrayal. And you deal with it well, but I can't look at my girlfriend afterwards.
On a road, they walk.
I'm going to change, but we'll meet up later.
Okay, when?
I don't know. I'll call.
He leans in and kisses her, then strolls down the road. At a park, children play.
While waiting for Joseph to make up his mind, melancholic Amy wanders through Sudesand.
Amy sits on a red play structure.
But 2 hours later, she's going mad.
In her house, she stands and grabs a phone off a bed. Outside, she bikes. She turns onto a gravel road. At Joseph's house, she peers through windows.
The suite is empty. Joseph isn't there. Then Hampus arrives and suggests they play a game of Ludo. The alcoholic version.
In a bar, Amy rolls a die.
1, 2, 3, 4.
She smiles.
This, I don't understand this move, and I don't understand where you're going. I can.
But that's the rules now. We just go back. We go backwards.
Go backwards.
Yeah.
And this piece, where does it go?
I think you have to drink that one.
How do I win? Tell me in this new way.
Go all the way back to your home.
And then I win.
Yeah.
So you change the rules to Amy.
Yeah.
Amy rules for Amy winnings. For Amy, I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm not so sure. I think...
Amy feels more and more lightheaded. She doesn't even see Joseph when he enters the cafe.
Amy and Hampus grab and push each other's hands. Joseph passes them and sits with a group.
On the last night, Nicolette, an amateur singer, performs a concert for her friends.
The first song I'm going to sing is very special for Jonas and I. Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things. Take off your silver spurs and help me pass the time.
Joseph leans against a post.
And I will give to you.
Amy eyes him. She downs a glass of red wine, then exits.
Oh, summer wine.
Outside, Amy walks along the candlelit stone wall. She treks down a slope and sits among rocks. She throws one. Nighttime at the Albatross. Amy approaches Joseph.
Can I have a cigarette?
It's my last one. We can share it.
She takes a drag.
So we're all going to the beach. You want to join us?
I don't want to be in a group. I want to be with you.
They lock eyes. He drops his gaze. She takes a drag.
Oh, I love this.
She hands Joseph the cigarette and pads inside. Joseph follows. They lean against a bar.
I play all my cards, and that's what you can do. Nothing more to say. No more easy to play.
A woman in a shiny dress dances alone. She pulls the maid of honor onto the dance floor. She dances toward Amy and extends her hand. Amy dances onto the floor with her. She stares at Joseph. He stares back. Smiling, Amy turns around and dances with the maid of honor. Joseph exits. The woman in the shiny dress dances on stage. Amy ascends to the stage, then turns toward the bar. A stool stands alone. She descends. She leaves and walks toward a restaurant. From the doorway, she looks around the restaurant. She takes out her phone.
Hi, this is Josef. I can't take the phone right now, but I'll leave the museum at the Lipton.
She rubs her eyes. On her phone screen, a text from Joseph. We left for the beach. Can I see you in your room later? She bikes. In Amy's house, she sits atop the staircase. She wears the white dress. She checks her phone, then clicks it off. Morning. She lies in bed. She grabs her phone. She types on the screen. She holds it to her ear. At a wooden door, Amy stands outside. She rounds the building from the door to Joseph's window. She peers inside. At a restaurant, Amy enters.
Hi, Betty.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Have you seen Joseph?
He left.
He left?
Yeah, with Vilma and Peter. They were taking the 11 o'clock ferry.
Outside, Amy grabs her bike. Nicolette approaches.
Hey.
Amy's brow furrows.
Are you okay? Is it Joseph?
Amy nods.
It's still not over, is it?
Amy goes back to Sudesat. Entering the house, she feels her restlessness subside. It is replaced by a cold sadness.
Stepping over the crumpled white dress, she lies on the bed.
So basically, that's where I'm at. Joseph's left. Amy's a mess. I could end it here. Or Amy could hang herself with the belt of her dress.
Really?
Or more dramatic, she could try and hang herself at the wing of the Bergman mill and then fail.
Classic.
At the house.
Anyway, I...
Chris sits on a blue bench.
I can't get beyond that point. I'm stuck.
You will.
Tony nods.
Do you think it's a movie?
Well, it depends on you. I mean, you look at something long enough, it becomes interesting, right? Somebody said that.
Thanks.
And it's good that you're focusing on a 3-day period. You've never done that before. You just have to find your ending, that's all.
Yeah, but I can't. So can you help me?
He shrugs.
I doubt it. And I don't think I'm the person to be discussing this with, do you?
Why not?
Why do you think? Shit.
Thanks for abandoning me at this critical moment.
Never happened.
He enters the house. Walking away from the house, Tony carries a bag. Chris follows.
You sure you don't want me to leave the car and take a taxi?
No. It can be 3 days without a car. I take the bike.
You're not going to freak out at night?
I will, but that's part of the game, no?
Well, if you get too scared, go to the B&B.
They kiss.
Yes. Take care driving your baby.
Always.
And good luck with the producers.
He reverses, then drives away. Chris walks along the stone wall toward the mill. In the mill, she sits at the desk. She lifts her journal. On a page, epilogue. She turns the page. Chris rolls out of bed. She exits the house. She grabs the bike and pedals. She bikes along a field stone wall. A blue street sign. Fura. She turns down a road. On a yellow sign with a red arrow, Lauter. She unfolds a note from her pocket. In pencil, Lauter. She turns. She cycles onto a street paved with red asphalt. In a forest, she bikes down a gravel road littered with brown tree debris. She turns at a fork. She winds down a path overgrown with grass. She parks the bike by a tree. She hikes down a slope toward a rocky shoreline. She walks along the shoreline, then slows. She trudges up a slope. A house rests behind trees. She smiles. She stops. Inside the house, seen through windows, a man walks. Chris walks around a stone wall. She eyes a red car beneath covered parking. She pads along a side porch. She opens a blue door. Behind the door, a pair of shoes rests. Inside,
hello?
She removes her shoes. She paces down a hall to a wall of windows. She turns toward a living room. She turns around. She passes a grandfather clock. She enters a room with walls full of bookcases. In the cases, movies fill the shelves. She walks through another room lined with shelves. Hampus stands on a ladder.
You scared me.
So did you.
It was open.
I should have locked the door from the inside. That's the rule.
They hug. He locks the door.
You came back to Fodor?
My grandfather died.
I'm sorry.
So I came back to light candles in his memory. And I figured I'd come by here.
And people from the foundation let you come and go?
Well, they know me. I'm not going to leave with the bedside table.
She smiles.
How are you? Any luck with the script?
Did an outline, but I haven't found an ending. Yet.
In an office, a lamp sits on a wooden desk.
This was his office.
Yeah. I came here to listen to music. Then I fell asleep. Bergman's house is a place where you fall asleep easily. It's these lambskin benches.
Hampus packs a canvas bag by a lambskin bench. Chris stares out a window. In a hallway, she passes a picture of a couple with their foreheads pressed against each other. Hampus dons a jacket by a door.
If you're looking for inspiration, I recommend it here. It's the meditation room, also known as Ingrid's room. Bergman had it built after his wife's death.
Ingrid's portrait hangs.
I have to go. I need to catch the 4 o'clock ferry. Don't forget to leave before 5 or the alarm will go off.
Okay.
They hug.
Thanks for the warning.
No problem. And when you leave, lock up and put the key in the box near the door. Okay?
Okay.
She smiles. Hampus exits. She sits on a bed padded with lambskins. She scans a corner lined with windows. She lies on the bed. Snapshots of rooms. A living room with an orange couch. The grandfather clock beside a fireplace. On the clock, 3 o'clock. In the meditation room, Joseph, now Anders, stands and crosses his arms.
Hi, Anders.
Hey, Chris.
For a second, I didn't know where I was. Everything was mixed up.
Crew left, so I thought you'd gone too.
I was tired. I needed to lie down.
Yeah, we're all exhausted. The shoot is almost over.
Yeah. You just got here?
No, I was watching you doing the last shot of the day. I didn't want to leave the island without seeing Bergman's house.
Anders and Chris pace through a living room filled with camera equipment.
Seriously, you could have written the scene for me here.
I tried. There was simply no reason for your character to be here. Oh.
She checks her watch.
It's almost 5. We have to leave before the carriage turns into a pumpkin.
Will you show me the library first?
Yeah. Follow me.
They enter the room filled with bookcases.
An entire life wouldn't be enough time for me to read 1/4 of these books.
This is my favorite object here. It's a model of the Dramaten, the National Theatre of Stockholm. It was given to Bergman when he left.
She flips a switch. Lights illuminate the model theater.
And who is in his favorite position spying?
A model of a person sits in the rafters.
Ingmar Bergman.
Outside, people pile food from platters onto plates. A man serves Amy. She carries a plate to a table with Anders and Chris. Nighttime. A car parks.
There's a car leaving for Albatross, if anyone's interested.
Me.
Amy raises her hand.
So, this is goodbye?
Yeah, I'm off early tomorrow.
Do you see your wife and kid will be waiting at the airport?
Yeah, I'd better find some nice presents in Stockholm, or I might as well take the first plane back.
Well, you can always get sheepskins.
Yeah.
Bye. Sleep well.
She hugs Chris.
Safe travels.
Bye.
Bye. See you tomorrow.
Amy runs. Anders sits.
So, one last game?
Yes. One cigarette and we'll go.
In a car, Anders drives. At a table, Chris rolls a die.
Back to the stable.
Oh, fucking way. I hate this game. Can you stop it, please?
Just admit that you don't like losing. You don't like it when things escape you.
If I needed a shrink, you'd be the second last person I'd go see.
Who'd be the last?
My mother. Oh, fuck.
Okay, enough. Let's stop. This game is ridiculous, and I really need to get some sleep. Estimated time of departure in 4 hours.
He grabs a jacket, rounds the table, and walks toward the door. He shrugs.
You're not coming to say goodbye?
She shakes her head.
I'm stuck.
He sits beside her. He strokes her hand. She lifts hers and holds his.
Thanks for everything.
He drops his hand. He nods.
Please don't thank me.
You should get some sleep. You have to be in shape tomorrow.
He nods.
Go, get going.
She taps the table. By the door, he looks at her. On the barge, Anders lies his head against a car window. Anders drives off the barge. A car with a girl hanging out the window drives onto the barge. The barge departs.
You want to go take a lift?
Yeah.
Tony and June walk toward the red and white gate.
So you know this island? It's kind of special, right?
Yeah, it's the island of the director you and Mommy like a lot.
Yep, that's it.
Is he alive or dead?
He's dead.
Did he go to heaven?
She climbs on the gate.
Questionable.
Dad, there's something I really want to ask you.
Go on, then.
Do ghosts really exist?
Yes.
Tell me the truth.
No.
Yes, they do.
Or they don't.
Then why do you tell ghost stories?
What?
Grandma said you were going to make a movie with ghosts.
Oh, Grandma said that, did she? What's she know?
She read it on the internet.
Oh, she's on the internet now, is she?
Yeah. Can you tell me your ghost story?
It's a zombie story, right? It's about zombies, right? And there's this monster, this gigantic, like, mushrooms coming out of its bum, like exploding ears, fast covered in poop from top to bottom, right? And blood bleeding from its eyes, and there's a giant girl.
At the house. Tony parks the gray hatchback. He opens the passenger door. June steps out. He kneels.
If you go up there, you look real hard. I think you might find your mum. Go on, go for it.
She runs along the field stone wall toward the mill. As she approaches the mill, she walks and glances around.
June!
Chris leans out the window. June runs. Chris dashes out the front door and scoops June into a hug. Tony follows behind June.
Oh, my baby. Oh, my love.
Cradling June to her shoulder, she smiles at Tony. Cut to black. A title, Bergman Island. Audio description written by Cassidy O'Reilly Hahn. Narrated by Clyde Pitts. Described by Audio Eyes. Credits appear. Written and directed by Mia Hansen Love. Produced by Charles Gilbert. Produced by Rodrigo Teixeira. Co-produced by Dietmar Gunche, Martin Rowe, Genevieve Lemal, Eric Hammendorf, Lisa Wyden, Julio Chavez Montes, Olivier Perret, Remy Bura. In association with RT Features, Dauphin Films, Charlotte Dauphin La Rochefoucauld, Charles Henry de La Rochefoucauld, Talipot Studio, Regina Solorzano, Executive Producer, Scope Invest. Executive Producers, Sophie Mas, Lorenzo Santana, Carmen Maya, Gustavo Rosa de Mora. Director of Photography, Dennis Lenoir, ASC AFC. Production Designer, Mikhail Varhelye. First Assistant Director, Marie Doler. Script Supervisor, Clementine Schaefer. Film Editor, Marianne Monnier. Costume Designer, Judith DeLuccia, Julia Tegstrom. Sound, Paul Haymans. Re-recording Mixer, Thomas Goddard. Makeup Artists, Juan Pacifico, Tortea Weiderman, Anne Morales, Key Grip, Temud Yin Janssens, Gaffer, Dirk Van Rampelberg, Line Producers, Pierre Wallen, Marianne Lambert, Julian Flick, Casting Directors, Antoinette Poulat, Pauline Hansen. Main Cast, Chris, Vicky Creeps, Tony, Tim Roth, Amy, Mia Wasikowska, Joseph, Anders, Anders Danielson-Lee, Hampus, Hampus Nordenson, Asse, Anke Larsen, Hada, Kirsten Brandberg, Birit, Melinda Kinneman, Stieg, Stieg Bjorkman, Projectionist, Magnus Almqvist, Tony's Film, Lily Taleb, Wouter Hendricks, Bergman Center, Hostess, Molly Bring Udin, Fans, Eva Mandorf, Hannah Alexanderson, Fia Hamburg, Bergman Safari, Guide, Ellen Lundqvist, Assistants, Elsa Rosengren, Teresa Melander, Participants, Gabe Klinger, Jordi Costa, Matthew Lesner, Josephine Legostrom, Hampus Legostrom, Esteban Alfaro, Clemens Polinger, Jan Holmberg, Gabriel Archer-Rollins, Goral Werkelin, Anne Wyman, Asa Eklund, Evert Janssen, Leon Garcia Jordan, Emma Jernberg, Daniel Kylan, Peter Jankert, Driver, Anne Meyerdahl, Pura Islanders, Lisbeth Carlson, Ragnar Aronson, Ronnie London, The White Dress, Chris's Film, Friends, Albin Grenholm, Siri Hjorten Wagner, Nicolette Bride, Clara Strauch, Janos Groom, Joel Spira, Dancers, Ella Schartner, Jennifer Winter, Wedding Minister, Ragnar Svensorud, Photographer, Felix Berg, Man on the Boat, Ingmar Bergman Jr., June, Gracie Del Rue, Sound Mixer, Paul Haymans, Sound Editor, Paul Haymans, Dialogue Editor, Etienne Carson, Supervising Dialogue Editor, Assistant Sound Editor, Joey Van Impe, ADR and Post Sync Supervisor, Anaïs Letexi, P.S. Masur, Post Sync Recorder, Philippe Charbonnel, Post Sync Boom Operator, Quentin Collette, Foley Artist, Philippe Van Leer, Foley Recorders, Alexis Oscari, Foley Editors, Mark Albaricio, Roland Vogler. Credits continue. A CG Cinema production in cooperation with Artifrance Cinema, New Bioscope Film, Scope Pictures, Platform Production, Gotland's Film Fund, Film Capital Stockholm, Piano. With the support of Your Images, Tax Shelter of the Belgian Federal Government via Scope Invest, Wall Image, Mitteldeutsche Medienförderung. In association with Kinology, an official French, German, Belgian, Swedish co-production. Copyright 2020 CG Cinema, New Bioscope Film, Scope Pictures, Platform Production, Artifrance Cinema. All rights reserved.